the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Number four of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We look forward to catching up with David Cutcliffe, the head coach at Duke, former Tennessee assistant. That'll be in our next segment. And we also look forward to catching up with Vol for Life Mike Stoll. That'll be at the bottom of the hour, around 6:35. But right now, still, a golden attaboy hangs in the balance, so it's time for you to showcase your mad trivia skills with a Sports Fix at 6. Jimmy, what is tonight's question?
Well, in honor of Coach Majors, we have got a question involving his career. So here we go. Coach Majors also coached at Iowa State and at Pitt. While he was at those two schools, he coached against two SEC opponents. Name the opponents. At Iowa State and Pitt, Coach Majors coached against two teams from the SEC. Name those two schools.
656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. And I guess, Jimmy, we should stipulate that we are not counting Missouri at that point in time at Iowa State because they weren't a member of the conference
then. Correct.
But 656-9900, let's start with Danny. Hello, Danny, how are you?
Hey, John, how you doing?
Doing fine, thank you.
How you doing, Jimmy?
Hey, fine. How you doing?
Pretty good. Two teams. That's so with Georgia and LSU.
Wow. Danny, did you say Georgia and LSU?
I did.
Well, you said the right answer.
Wow.
Man.
Wow.
Danny.
That was a guess. I didn't know for sure.
Well, you know for sure you're the winner. You got it. You
nailed
it. One and done. Good job, Danny.
Okay, thank you.
That is unbelievable. Jimmy, he played LSU while he was at Iowa State. That was in the Sun Bowl as he built the program. And then he wound up at Pitt playing Georgia three times as that was his very first game. And that was the only he never lost to Georgia while he was at Pitt. But he did fail to beat the Bulldogs. His very first game, his only tie ever as the head coach of the Panthers, was a tie against Georgia his first year, and then beat them 2 years later, and then beat them in the Sugar Bowl to win the national championship.
Yeah, I remembered that national championship game. I remember watching that. I also saw the bowl game against LSU. So how about that? Good question, and Danny was on the spot. Good job, Danny.
Yeah, well done. So, Danny, you have won a golden attaboy. That's yours for good, and now we hope that you'll hang on and enjoy your audio reward.
That is correct.
Always remember, if you ain't first, you're last.
There's heroes and there's legends. Heroes get remembered, but legends never die.
You are the most influential player on this team.
You're 5 feet nothing, 100 and nothing, and you got hardly a speck of athletic ability. And you hung in with the best college football team in the land.
From the soles of your feet, with every ounce of blood you've got in your body, lay it on the line until the final whistle blows. And if you do that, cannot lose.
Remember when Bobby Boucher showed up at halftime and the Bud Dogs won the Bourbon Bowl, do you?
Pain heals. Chicks dig scars. Glory lasts forever.
I can get used to this winning thing!
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am.
Yes, I've done it.
And Danny with the victory screech as he nails today's trivia question. And we'll have another, we hope, challenging trivia question with tomorrow night's program. But right now, as we remember and celebrate Coach John Majors, do want to take a quick moment to say hello to Dr. Jerry Punch, who wanted to join the conversation. Doc, how are you?
I am good, guys. Sad on this day when we lost a legend in coaching in Coach Majors. I had a chance to do games with him when he was at Pittsburgh, at Tennessee, After he coached and he was a legend and I was doing all-star college football, all-star games, he came out and just such a wonderful human being that we're all going to miss him. But, you know, as a media member, John, I remember the fact that he was so candid and so honest with us. If he told me, we're going to go left, they went left. If he told me we're going to go right, none of this bait and switch stuff. He understood we had a job to do. Now, if we asked him a question just before halftime, the halftime show was going to be delayed a little bit because he was going to take a while to answer. But he was such a wonderful guy to be around and work with, and I know that we're all going to miss him, and we're going to remember. And I heard you guys earlier today before I left town, and I've been able to listen a little bit in my travels of the show about maybe Tennessee remembering his number, which I think would be a wonderful idea in some way, shape, or form.
Oh, well, and they have. He actually is now number 45, is a part of Tennessee's retired numbers, which is fantastic to see. A.J. Johnson was the last to actually wear the number, and so it has been taken out of circulation since then, and it is indeed recognized as a retired number. But, Doc, thank you so much for sharing a quick thought or two on the passing of Coach Majors, and I know that's all your interactions you had a chance to have you cherish.
Well, he was wonderful to so many of us, and we're going to miss him. But we were all better for having him as a part of the Ball Nation and as a coach at Tennessee and Pittsburgh, and certainly a legend that will be remembered for a long time. Thanks, guys. Well, let me chime in and give you my thoughts.
Sure to appreciate it, Doc. We will talk to you Monday. That's Dr. Jerry Punch. When we return, Duke coach David Cutcliffe joins us next on Sports Talk.
To take the latest on Tennessee sports coverage with you anywhere you go, download the Sports Radio WNML app. Powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. And as the day we celebrate John Majors, Jimmy, we go back to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline for yet another special guest and someone we're proud to say is a longtime friend.
Well, that's exactly right. It's David Cutcliffe. He is a head coach at Duke. He was a longtime assistant at Tennessee, a longtime offensive coordinator at Tennessee. David, how are you?
Well, I'm good. I'm like everybody when I got the call, really. Early this morning, it just stunned me. I thought about it when I heard about Coach Dye. I had somebody from Auburn. You know, I had a couple guys work with us that played for Coach Dye. And first person I thought of when I heard of Coach Dye was Coach Majors, and had wanted to get him on the phone. Isn't it crazy how things work out like that? And yeah, just a tough day, to be honest with you. Had a tough time just even conducting my staff meeting this morning.
Why did you think of Coach Majors when you heard about Coach Dye? Was it just because you knew that they were good friends, or you were just concerned about Coach Majors?
Just always concerned, you know, when I'd see him, whether it was at a clinic, and I'd seen him more over the last few years, more and more, and talked with him on the phone, although his hearing wasn't good. Maybe that's why we got along so well. You know what I was saying at the end, but you know, he and Coach Dye were certainly contemporaries. In our time there in the early '80s, mid '80s, Auburn had raised the bar. People forget that, and that became the target. And in recruiting, and I had South Georgia and Georgia and Alabama, so I'm going head-to-head with that Auburn staff. And, you know, Coach Dye brought out the competitive parts of Coach Majors. And I don't think, you know, you could ignore the fact that that was where he was. And we went after Auburn, and he successfully accomplished that, you know. You go back and look at those games there in the mid-'80s, it made a huge difference in our program to elevate ourselves and attack Auburn, and that was attacking Pat Dye in his eyes.
It's well known that Coach Majors could be demanding of his assistant coaches, and I just want you to talk about your relationship with him when you were an assistant at Tennessee and then your relationship that came later when you were a head coach at Duke.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I had nothing but the ultimate respect for Coach Majors, as a young assistant, learning from him starting in 1982, was it easy? No, but that's a different era. I don't think that you could take his way and utilize it today with young coaches. I had a pretty thick skin, and you had to have that. But in the end, it's kind of like the way you knew you were getting better. And unfortunately, all too often, he was right, you know, kind of make you mad. One of the things that I will say that I appreciated, and maybe it's that era that's somewhat passing away now, they didn't go around behind your back. They went straight at you. And you know, I did stand my ground some with him. And I think he respected that. I do. We talked about that. But he was challenging. Larry Lacewell told me one time, and I was with Coach Majors 11 years, and he said, "You're either the dumbest or the toughest SOB I've ever known." And I said, "Probably dumbest, you know." But you know, it made me better. I promise you that. The few years that I was over here at Duke, and I knew Coach Majors. I took great notes, and Coach Majors had talked about Duke and Tennessee and his era as a player, and he had a great half over here. And he and I hadn't talked much, and, you know, there's no reason to beat all of that up right now, in my opinion, that era. But I just felt like it was time to get past that. And so David Moon and Glenn Streno and a few of the old linemen that I love so dearly from that era, I called them and I said, "Guys, let's get a plane. Let's bring him over. I want to hear what he thinks about our practices. I want him to be in that stadium." You know, and we did that. And I let him talk with the staff after practice, certainly the team, but after I let him critique coaching, and because he was phenomenal at it. He had great eye for football. And then he and I went up and sat in my office and laid everything on the table. And it was a great moment for me. I'm glad I did it. He was very meaningful to me in my coaching career. And so, you know, I think it's a good way to do things, particularly without a pandemic. It was a great hug, and we were good after that. And I was always, you know, a part of the Nike clinics where he had part ownership in those Nike Coach of the Year clinics. And so he would come in and sit in the room, and I would see him smile, Jimmy and John, when I would use some of his expressions or talk about some of the practice habits that it takes to win. And he knew exactly where they came from, and I intended him to know. So I give him great credit for so many parts of me that are good, if there is any good parts of me. So, yeah, I'm going to miss him. I truly am.
David, always great to catch up with you. What was the process like as you made the move from being the head coach at Banks High School to join Tennessee staff as a graduate assistant? What was it like to connect with Coach Majors, and how did that opportunity present itself?
Well, it's interesting, you know, it ties into Philip Fulmer and certainly Coach Majors. Philip was an assistant at Vanderbilt for George McIntyre, and Nashville's not very far from Birmingham. We had good program, had good players, and Philip had signed one of our players at Vanderbilt, and we developed an acquaintanceship at that time. And then we had some good players again, and Coach Majors came down with Philip to watch a practice. They were going to stay there just minutes, and ended up staying the whole practice. And Coach Majors afterwards wanted to talk with me, and, you know, he wanted to know, "Where'd you learn how to run a football practice like that?" And so we talked, and Philip called me back later, said, "Coach Majors, when the season's over, he's going to talk to you about a job." And yeah, I'm like, "Yeah, right, okay," you know. And then sure enough, they called and flew me up there and offered me a job. And different era, we all know that. but I forgot to ask what it paid, and I accepted it. And I got up there, and my Social Security report, when it comes in, reminds me my first year at Tennessee. I came in January, I think it was. Coached through that December and made a little under $3,500. And I didn't say $35,000. I said $3,500. But Coach Majors informed me that very next spring that the NCAA had decided to go from 8 full-time coaches to 9 full-time coaches. And I did an interview for that when he just told me that was going to be me. And I think I tried to just be a good worker. And I tell young people today, you know, a lesson of that and with Coach Majors and lessons from Coach Bryant is that instead of people that are out seeking another job, I think if you focused on the one you've got and you do it as well as you can possibly do it, you got a better chance of becoming someone's best choice or whatever that is. And I've tried to live my life that way, and I've tried to live in my career that way. And I'm thankful that Coach Majors saw something in me to give me that shot. And Philip was great to me during that era. I don't want that being left unsaid. I don't think I would have gotten the opportunity to begin with without Philip. So, you know, even being an Alabama grad, I really post my career to Tennessee and all the great people there and the institution and just what it's meant not only to my career but to our lives. And so, yeah, Coach Majors passing away, you know, I just feel like it put part of me in the ground today, and I mean that respectfully.
Can very much understand. And it's no doubt about it, he had such a connection to his players as well as his assistants. And we talked about this with his brother Bobby, and that is 33 assistant coaches for John Majors have gone on to become head coaches. You're a part of that tree. And, of course, now, as long as you've been a head coach, you've got a tree of your own. And I'm just wondering, what's it like to be a part of the Coach Majors tree, and what does it mean to you when you see somebody sprout from your staff to go get that first opportunity?
I am passionate about that, John. I'm very proud that I worked for John Majors, and I'm proud of what I learned and what I know. I'm proud to pass it on. I can't tell you how many coaches today that have worked with us or for us contacted me with condolences, because they knew, and I shared lessons, and I didn't plagiarize. I always give Coach Majors the credit when I repeat things that he so deeply believed in about practice. They've become a big part of my DNA, and I think it's one of the reasons I'm very confident that we can be successful in the toughest of circumstances in jobs, because if you go back to the fundamentals of coaching, teaching, and then getting it done on the grass, I don't know that there was anybody any better than John Majors at running a practice and how you go about trying to build a winner. So I think all coaches that have worked for him and with him and with us through the years as we've carried on have benefited from it. I got some of the best young coaches right now. Oh, my goodness. And they're going to be great head coaches. And you know what's the better part of that? And I think Coach Majors and I talked about this, is that when you not only coach players and you coach coaches, and he considered himself a coach of coaches, then your influence can carry on for many, many, many years beyond your existence. So what I would tell Mary Lynn, if she were face-to-face with me, that John Majors won't suffer the second death so often people do, where they're forgotten. His ways and his teachings are going to live not only through me, but others that I've touched and others that they touch. And that's why that word and that title, I should say, coach, teacher, because there are also teachers that are the same way out there, is one of the more honorable professions still in this world. So, yeah, I'm emotional and I'm talking a lot, but that's what we do when we are faced with these circumstances.
David, you've mentioned the names of two iconic coaches, John Majors and Bear Bryant. Do you think your practices more resemble what you learned from Coach Majors than from Coach Bryant?
Yeah, because particularly more pertinent to less players. In Coach Bryant's era, there were so many more players, you know, Jimmy, on the field. The makeup of the practice was really completely different in so many ways. I think one of the things I liked about what Coach Majors did was that his utilization of time was phenomenal. And we got on the field. He stressed coaching on the run and movement and tempo a good bit more than Coach Bryant did. And I think it's fit well in an era where we have less players. We got to get more done in a shorter period of time. And so I think what we do today does mimic him quite a bit more.
Hey, David, thank you so much for taking the time to join us, and really do appreciate your comments about Coach Majors.
Well, I appreciate you guys. You know, y'all have lived it all. It's pretty cool that you're still there and operating and running, and you yourselves have a great tradition. So keep carrying the fight to the opponent and keep it there for how long are y'all on? 3 hours?
Four.
So we used to have to carry the fight to the opponent and keep it there for 60 minutes. Y'all got to do it for 4 hours, boys, so crank it up, okay?
Well, when we get behind, we're going to pour on more steam.
I got you, man. I love it. I know you will. Well, I know that a part of those game maxims will never leave David Cutcliffe. And John Majors, God bless you. Rest in peace and thank you. Take care, guys.
David, thank you.
You too, David.
All right. Bye-bye.
David Cutcliffe, head coach at Duke, was hired by John Majors as a full-time assistant in 1983. His comments about the passing of Coach Majors.
Joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, and we'll get a break when we return, VFL Mike Stoll joins us next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
This is VFL Josh Malone, and we're counting it down. It is just
94 days until
it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com. Go on!
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson as we celebrate John Majors. And it is an absolute pleasure to say hello once again to one of my best friends on the planet, a longtime friend of Sports Talk, and former employee as part of doing Saturday Sports Talk, high school football, you name it, former Tennessee co-captain, former All-SEC offensive lineman, and head coach of the Wilson County Raiders. Mike Stoll joins us now. How are you, Mike?
Well, John, I'm doing good. You made me sound pretty good there.
Well, it took me most of the afternoon to put that together.
Yeah, well, I try to make my resume look good, even though it's just all smoke and mirrors.
Mike, great to catch up with you. And one of the things I've enjoyed most is we become great friends. Is just you made it clear from the start that without Coach Majors, you don't make the move from Idaho to Knoxville. I mean, it changed your life. And I'm just wondering, just take us through the start. How was it you got to know Coach Majors, and what was it like to go through the recruiting process that brought you to the University of Tennessee?
Well, you're right. I mean, just the amazing impact that Coach Majors has had on my life. And, you know, this is back in the day when they didn't have websites, they didn't have cell phones, they didn't have any of that stuff, and it was a lot of things were word of mouth. There was a former track athlete from the University of Tennessee who was actually a neurosurgeon who was out in Idaho, who used to keep his eye out for talent in the Northwest area, and he'd always send, you know, kind of press clippings or anything of anybody, and there was a couple of guys that had connections there, and he was friends with John Majors, and he reached out to Coach Majors and made him aware, and You know, they kind of started recruiting me. And, you know, when you first meet John Majors and Coach Majors, you know, you think back to, you know, he was just the poster card or the poster child for what an iconic, you know, late 80s, mid 80s football, college football coach was. He was just, you know, wore a tie, wore a jacket, very professional, fiery kind of guy, loved and had great knowledge for the game. And as he recruited me, you know, and he's like, you know, young man, you've got a chance to come here. You know, he says, shoot, there's more people here in the stadium than there is in your hometown. That's the capital of Idaho. So you need to come down here. We'd love to have you. And, you know, it was just from the moment that you met him, you know, his charisma, the way he carried himself. It is, you know, what you think of when you think of just an old school college football coach.
Mike, when I think of Coach Majors and a guy that played both ways when he was in high school and in college, I think that allowed him to expand his knowledge of the game to where he could tell a defensive back what to do, a receiver what to do, and even an offensive lineman. He was very meticulous in his detail about making sure everybody had their fundamentals correct. Did you see that in him?
Yeah, you know, and I think it carried down from him to all the other coaches in it, and it's carried on to me. And that's the one thing that I learned and he preached and he taught is, you know, you don't know your position, but you know everything. You know why everything is occurring. And you know why the running back's doing this. You know why the receiver's doing this. And this is what they're doing on this play, not just what you're doing, but what everybody's doing. And he had a tremendous knowledge for the game. And he would, you know, I heard Charles Davis talking earlier where he'd sit up in the tower and, you know, he'd yell at one of the managers, give me that mic. And he you know, he hit it, you go beep, beep, and he's hitting the wrong button. Then he started talking and you couldn't hear what he said. And you're always wondering, like, okay, I hope he's not talking to me, and I hope he's not watching my drill, you know. And that's where he always, like, you know, it's one of those things you tried to do the drills right because you're like, oh, gosh, is he over here looking my way? Make sure you know, stand tall, do everything right because you just didn't want him interrupting everything. And the assistant coaches darn sure didn't want you in there messing up their drill and then having him come in and teach them and tell them how to run the drill and so that we would run the drill right. And so – you know, his knowledge and his love for knowledge, right? His love for understanding the game is what taught me so much that, you know, as I'm in football now, I just see football in a different way that, you know, you try and watch it as a fan, but you just see it in a totally different light. He taught, you know, the art form to the game of football and how everything works together and meshes together. And it's really, you know, it was a great experience for me. And again, just what you think of when you think of an iconic college football coach.
Charles Davis talked about the great pregame speech he gave the team before the Sugar Bowl, the victory over Miami. Did you enjoy Coach Majors' pregame speeches?
You know, Coach Majors, he always had sayings. And I think that was the one thing that, you know, I learned along the way. He always had his little phrases and his sayings, you know. And if and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. And, you know, he'd always throw out certain little catchphrases. Some of his pregame speeches were great. Some of his pregame speeches, you're kind of scratching your head because you couldn't follow him because he was really, you know, very, very deep into what he was thinking. But you know, I think you guys played it earlier, kind of him talking after the Notre Dame win that we had in 1991 up there. And I will remember his speech, and not the speech during the game or before the game, but I'll remember, you know, we traveled up there to South Bend, and we flew to Chicago. We bussed over to Notre Dame the day before to kind of do a walkthrough to kind of get a feel for the field. It was snowing, you know, it was November, but there was snow on this stadium. It snowed several inches overnight, and we were kind of like, oh, gosh, what's this all about? And I'll never forget, you know, I mean, again, you think about just those iconic coaching scenes where we're standing there. We just got through our walkthrough. You know, you're standing in Notre Dame Stadium. You're getting ready to play one of the top teams in the country. Nobody really gives you much of a chance. We had played well, and we had not played well. everybody was talking about how Notre Dame was going to go play Florida State basically the following week for the national championship. And we're standing there, and it's just, you know, one of those scenes where we're on the field, there's snow around the sidelines. You can see the snow on the old wooden benches and the bleachers that they still had that they wouldn't replace just because of the tradition. And he comes out, and he has a long trench coat on because it's cold, and he's got his tie, and he's got his jacket under there, and he's standing around, and he looks, and he says, they talk about ghosts in this stadium. He says, I don't know about you, but I haven't seen any ghosts. He says, and tomorrow we're going to go make history. And, you know, I'll never forget kind of just that image of him and him just standing there so stoically and claiming that. And it was just, what a great moment to capture for myself. And again, just, you know, what Tennessee football was to him and how he portrayed it.
I don't know that our guest Mike Stoll, Vol for Life, as he joins us, sharing thoughts and memories on Coach John Majors. You have that jersey, right? You took that, you set it aside. It almost got lost when it was transported back home to Knoxville, but you framed that jersey. It's not been washed. Everything that's there from Notre Dame Stadium is still could be lifted from that if they needed evidence, right?
That's right. There's still DNA evidence on that jersey. There's grass stains, there's blood stains. They almost stopped and threw it out because it was all sweaty and stank to high heaven. But when they were driving back, my mom and them, but I have that jersey. And again, you know, just what a wonderful memory for myself, but just to be a part of that. And then, you know, kind of how things unfolded on my senior year and how that went. You know, I was there as a senior, as a captain in his last game at Tennessee against Kentucky. And we just kind of threw him up on our shoulders and we carried him off the field. And what a great moment. What a blessing for me to be a part of, to be able to do that. And to, you know, just to, again, see how he truly just loved coaching and loved coaching at the University of Tennessee.
I'll never forget the pregame speech. And you talked about how it's not as though it was always the easiest to follow, but you shared it with us a couple of times on Saturday Sports Talk. And that was Coach Majors just kind of bursts into the room and says, men, there are things you can't get back. The spoken word, and he's doing these gestures. Spoken word, a shot arrow, and a missed opportunity.
Absolutely.
And then he left.
Yeah. And, you know, that was against Alabama in 1989. We were, 1990 at home. They were down. We were supposed to beat them. And, you know, we were like, okay, this is the year. You know, he always talked about beating Alabama. We had to do it. And he, as he comes into the meeting room and he's standing there and got his hands in his pants, you know, kind of up on his toes a couple times. And man, there's three things in this world you can't get back: a spoken word. And he kind of, you know, makes a little flapping sound with his hands, a shot arrow at a missed opportunity. He kind of just grows silent, just turns and walks out the door. And Dale Carter kind of looked around, stood up and goes, I don't know what that was all about. Let's go beat those boys though. And we got up and we went out there. But again, a great memory of Coach Majors. And, you know, he was a deep thinker, and he forced you to think deep sometimes. And, again, what a tremendous guy. A tough day for the Orange Nation today. And, you know, I think about him and I just smile because, you know, he was a character. He was a fiery kind of guy. And as a player, it was really a blessing to be a part of what he taught me, not only on the field, but, you know, he knew. He was teaching that stuff that we were going to apply it in life, and it really has applied in life.
Mike, as I said when we welcomed you to the program, you are going to be it's a cooperative middle school program. It'll be a total of three teams that come together to form one in Wilson County, where you live and work. And I'm just wondering, you did some coaching and you've done some for a little while now, but have you found yourself using any of his majorsisms as you coach young men?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's so funny because you sit there and you watch the kids do the drills and the players running through things, and you're thinking to yourself, and you'll shout something out, you know, attack, attack, come on, you know, keep going. And I've used Harvey the Rabbit before, where Coach Mays used to say, you know, make a move in the outfield on Harvey Rabbit. The kids will look at him. They really don't know what you're talking about now. I've used the quote, you know, to make excuses. If and buts for candy and nuts, we all have a Merry Christmas, so don't make excuses. You know, and those majorisms and just those things, because the kids kind of look at you and then they get a kick out of it. So, yeah, it's, you know, again, fortunate to have the influence of somebody like Coach Majors and, learn the thing that did it. And again, changed the trajectory of my life forever. You know, you think about, I could have stayed out west. I could have been in Idaho. I could have gone anywhere out west. And, you know, I came here. My family's moved here. I've got kids here now. I've got a daughter that's married here and lives in Knoxville. It's just, it's totally changed the trajectory of my life and my lineage.
Well, I don't think there's any question that what has rang true from everybody that we've spoken with today was the impact that that Coach Majors had. And we've talked with media members, we've talked with players, coaches, you name it. It really has been such a remarkably consistent narrative as to just the impact that Coach Majors had on just about everybody, that if you had a chance, if you were fortunate enough to spend time with him over a period of time, he would leave an impression. But, Mike, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, your memories, your love for Coach Majors today with us.
Well, guys, I appreciate it. And like I said, you know, I think that's the true measure of a great coach and a great human being is just the impression they leave on people. He's definitely impacted a tremendous amount of lives. You know, he was a great, true love for Tennessee. And I'm blessed and fortunate just to have played under him and gotten to know him.
Mike, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Y'all have a great day.
Thanks, Mike.
You as well. And that is Vol for Life, Mike Stoll. We'll get a break and be back to close out today's edition of Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
I know it's hard to keep up,
but we ain't slowing down.
99.1 The Sports Animal.
Coach Majors, I mean, his passion was for, you know, for football was just very high. He played football. He understood football. He coached it. He taught it. And he just demanded just that. He taught us that discipline, you know, the attention to detail, and it carried over. I mean, one of the main lessons that I'm never going to forget about Coach Majors was he would always say, always be 5 minutes early for everything and anything. And even to this day, I mean, if you tell me 10 o'clock, you know, I'm there at 9:55.
Carl Pickens talking about John Majors. As Jimmy, it has been an unbelievable afternoon to catch up, to hear the memories, and laugh as much as we have from the start of the show to now, and look forward to catching up with more folks over these next few days, and who knows? I mean, it's just, again, so well worth celebrating such an incredible individual in John Majors, who passed away earlier today.
Well, you're right, and we thank David Moon and Bobby Majors, John's younger brother, Steve Early with the Vol Network, Mike Keith, Charles Davis, David Cutcliffe, Mike Stoll. We thank them for joining us as we wanted to pay tribute and celebrate John Majors' life. He had become a very dear friend. I know that you thought the world of him. I did, too. Really enjoyed having him for the number of years that we did, where he joined us on each week during the football season. As I mentioned earlier, the hard thing was trying to schedule it to where he wasn't going to be going to Pittsburgh or Iowa State or some other venue to visit some coaching friend of his. He was always traveling a lot, which made it interesting, but really did appreciate him joining us and appreciated the friendship and all the things that he did. So, and we do thank those that joined us in paying tribute to Coach Majors.
Very much so, and it is going to take some getting used to. Coach Majors spent time with us, I believe it was 4 seasons, might have been 3, but I know we were trying to hash that out earlier today before the show, but just to be able to share his memories and then also see how incredibly active he was.
Yeah.
Because like you said, he was always going somewhere, and if he wasn't going somewhere, he had been a head coach before. He might have been traveling to just experience something that he hadn't, or had been invited to be a part of either some coaching clinic or something. I mean, it was just amazing how he was always on his way somewhere.
Yeah, it really was. And that was great. I thought it was wonderful that he was traveling that much and enjoyed the travel. John, I do want to mention a couple things. Tennessee Athletic Director Philip Fulmer asked about fans being at Neyland Stadium. He said a decision has been made, but it's more positive. Indications to me from several folks I've talked to, Tennessee's looking at trying to get a third of the stadium full. So we'll see if that comes to fruition, but that has not been made. A decision hadn't been made. As far as football workouts, he said they won't share footballs. They won't share weights. The coaches will keep their distance from the players, and they will have a limited number of players there. Now, Tennessee did have some student-athletes that reported today. And over the next week or so, they'll end up with about 90 football players coming back. But some have already reported. They're checking in. They're getting tested. They're getting screened. Masks are required. And they are going to work in smaller groups. Locker rooms will be closed. So wanted to point that out. And also, how about this one? At Ole Miss, they had some that came back. There is a student-athlete that has a positive test. There are two people in the athletic department that have positive tests. And there is also a staff member that has a positive test. They are going to be quarantined for 14 days. They did not mention the names of those involved. But when you have a bunch of people coming back, you can kind of expect that you're going to have some of them to test positive. It'd be very unusual not to have somebody in that regard. And so then you got to quarantine them for 14 days. But anyway, that's what's going on at Ole Miss, and we're just outlining what's happening at Tennessee as far as the athletes returning. Again, some already coming back, and they'll have about 90 coming back over the next week or so. Men's and women's basketball, they're going to be returning June 15 to 16. And then other fall sport athletes will be returning to campus in early July.
Wow. That's all you can do is as we get back towards not necessarily normalcy, but as we head back in the right direction, I think one thing there, everybody's got a plan, and we'll just see exactly how often they have to implement said plan dealing with positive tests, simply for the fact that it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be bad, but it also doesn't mean it won't be.
Well, and I think that's a good lesson for a lot of us out there, that even though they've opened up a variety of things, still practice social distancing. Still be smart about it. Wear a mask when you can. I always do that when I go to the grocery store. Just be really careful about what you do so we don't have a lot of outbreaks that occur. But Tennessee's going to be careful with the student-athletes as they return, and hopefully everybody in the public will also be concerned about this and make sure they do the right things.
Jimmy, I couldn't have asked for a more enjoyable experience simply for as we celebrate, like you said, Coach Majors today.
Well, I'm glad we had the opportunity to be joined by a lot of folks, and our prayers and thoughts with the Majors family.
Very much so. You can find it on 99.1thesportsanimal.com. Don't forget, In the Cage tonight at 8. This is Sports Talk.